genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here. Our theme today is Don't Be Naive, and our second guest is Dave Zirin. He's the author of the book Bad Sports, but it is Friday the 13th, and we're having some technical difficulties reaching him, so we're going to wait for him to call into our studio. For those of you who are not familiar with Dave Zirin, he's an interesting guy. He was named by Unte Reader as one of the 50 visionaries who are changing our world, and he's a sports writer. He's the host of SiriusXM Radio's most popular weekly show, Edge of Sports Radio. He's also a columnist for Nations Magazine, Slam Magazine, The Progressive, and he's a regular op-ed writer for the LA Times. He's an absolute rabid fan of the Mets, the Jets, and the Wizards, and he's going to be talking to us about bad sports, how owners are ruining the games that we love. He has an interesting perspective and an interesting take on the business of sports as it is today, and it's one that the Billy the Brain and Dave don't particularly agree on as well. So we're going to get into that when we reach him online. Friday the 13th, the curse is lifted. Dave Zirin joins us now from an undisclosed location back east. Dave, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, sorry for calling in late. Very happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you, no matter how much time we get to spend with you. Let me just set this up for people who don't know about you. I consider you the Freddy Krueger of sports writing. You've got a slash-and-burn style that leaves absolutely no doubt where you stand on the issues. Your latest book, Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Game, we love. You address humorously facts about the sports business that many of us are too naive or perhaps too uninformed to consider, and it really kind of paints a very negative picture of modern sports. I've already set you up as a visionary, you're changing the world one day at a time, and so forth, and that you love the Mets, the Jets, and the Wizards. So there you go, the holy...
You notice the New York triumvirate team that's missing there is the New York Knicks, and I talk about that in the book, but about how the ownership of that team has just degraded what was my boyhood love.
Well, let's dig into that and let's talk about it. What is it about the ownership of the Knicks that really turns you off?
Well, got James Dolan. I mean, people might have seen the news recently that James Dolan just tried to rehire Isaiah Thomas. And there, if you know, people know anything about sports, you'd know that when Isaiah Thomas was the general manager of the Knicks, he sent them several hundred million dollars over their payroll, all to produce a last place team, all while James Dolan held his hand the whole way through it. Now, if you're a fan of the Knicks, you know who James Dolan is. I mean, there's an old expression in politics that there's nothing more dangerous than stupidity backed by arrogance. And in James Dolan, you have somebody who's both stupid and arrogant. I mean, he's so stupid in not realizing how much this would upset the New York fan base that he was playing footsie with Isaiah. And he's also so arrogant in that he didn't think that the rules of the NBA didn't apply to him, because the key part of this story is that Isaiah Thomas is currently a college coach at Florida International University. And the NBA has very, very strict rules that you cannot hire college coaches to be part of an NBA front office, because the oldest rule in the NBA is, hey, you can't talk to college players when they're still college students. You cannot have contact with them. Now, obviously, a coach would have contact.
Right.
So that's the stupidity backed by arrogance play. And honestly, what it's done is it's taken a proud franchise and degraded it. And all the while, they now have the most expensive ticket prices in the NBA. They take literally hundreds of millions of dollars in public funds to keep in tax breaks, keep the stadium afloat or the Madison Square Garden afloat, at the same time that the city itself is enduring cutbacks and firing teachers and all the rest of it. And in James Dolan, you have somebody who's a billionaire who earned his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it. And I got to tell you, it is more than a little bit galling.
Well, I love talking to you, Dave Zirin, because there's no question where you stand on the issues. But let's get right to it, if we could, please. And sports is a business. I mean, that's the bottom line. And business, the job of the owner, heck, it might even be the duty of the owner, is to return as much money to the shareholders as possible, even if there's only one shareholder and that shareholder is the owner himself. So, you know, when you look at this as a business, isn't a James Dolan or isn't somebody, anybody who owns a sports team, really doing this for the money and to maximize the profits?
Well, I would agree with you but also disagree with you, because there's another job of the owner as well, and I would argue it's also the job of people who are on Wall Street, and it's also the job of people who head up oil companies, and far too often they forget this and screw it up, is that they also have a very basic responsibility to the long-term success and stability for their business. I mean, you talk about me being a slash-and-burn sports writer. What is Goldman Sachs but a slash-and-burn investment banking company? What is BP British Petroleum but a slash-and-burn oil company? I mean, not caring about the fact that their stock in the years to come is going to be worthless as they begin to pay out money to the Fisher folk who they've destroyed in the Gulf and the tourist communities they've destroyed in the Gulf. And I think too often sports ownership has really acclimated us to this style, not caring about the long-term stability and health of their product, and instead sacrificing the whole kit and caboodle just so they can make that short-term profit that doesn't really go beyond the nose on their face. Like, how are you going to have a new generation of fans if kids can't stay up late enough to watch the end of a World Series game because you're starting the games after 9 o'clock, let alone have a day World Series game? How are you going to have a new generation of fans if people can't afford to take their families to the game? And all the best seats are taken up by corporate seats, and far too often those seats just end up unused anyway. These are the questions that we're talking about.
Well, absolutely. We're talking to Dave Zirin, everybody, and I agree with you there. However, if you're a Darwinian capitalist and you look at stupid plays like a James Dolan, and you cite many, many other owners in the book, but let's just pick on him for a minute. Let's say he is stupid, but ultimately, Darwinian capitalism will say he will either lose his franchise, be bought out by somebody else, run it into bankruptcy, and somebody will come in and save it. So the system has a mechanism in the end.
That's a great question. I mean, I'm going to say, give you a big fat and yet. And yet, the New York Knicks are, depending on what you look at, either the first or second most productive and profitable franchise in the NBA, along with the LA Lakers. Now, how are they so successful if they're so terrible? Well, they benefit greatly from public subsidies, and they benefit greatly from the price of their tickets, which gets sold in New York because it's a boutique market and all the rest of it. And so the Darwinian model just does not apply when it comes to pro sports because of the sheer level of corporate welfare involved. I wish you were right. I wish we did live in the freest of free markets. I totally wish that James Dolan was running this team into the ground to the point where he would have to sell or risk going bankrupt. But he's living high on the hog and feels like he doesn't have to be accountable to anybody or anything, let alone the bottom line.
All right. Well, let's talk about the holy trinity of funding right now, the revenue streams for most sports. And in the book, you say that three are public funds for stadiums, corporate sponsorships, which you just alluded to, and television rights. We had Bill Rasmussen on yesterday from ESPN in the early years there. So talk to us about those revenue streams. How have they impacted the game?
Tremendously, they've impacted the game. I would argue that this hasn't been discussed nearly enough in mainstream sports coverage, but it's fundamentally altered the relationship of sports to our city. Because it's not that owners today are worse or more nefarious than their forebears. It's not that back in the day, owners were cuddly and didn't care about profits and loved little kids and whatnot. The main difference is that if an owner, even 30 years ago, cared about the bottom line of the success of their franchise, it meant having butts in the seats. That's what it meant. It meant when they would show their games on regular television or regular radio, having enough interest of, you know, of marketers and of companies that they would want to buy commercial time because they knew people were listening. So there you have a very basic, as you were talking about it before, Darwinian analysis there, a very basic sort of supply and demand analysis. It's like you put forward a good product, and that means people come to the park, and that means you get to sell commercials on free television and free radio, and huzzah, huzzah, you make a lot of money. And if you put out a bad product, you don't. What you have now are these fixed, huge, mammoth revenue streams that so dwarf accountability to the fans. I mean, what they have now are hundreds of millions of dollars coming from taxes. I mean, if you're you're getting that, who cares what the team looks like? I talked about the Kansas City Royals in the book. Just got a huge new stadium. What the hell do they care about putting forward a good product when they're getting hundreds of millions of dollars for the stadium? I mean, we as fans have become scenery for the park. And every time I hear about low fan turnout, what I always hear is like, instead of, oh, this is going to hurt our bottom line, we're not going to be able to make payroll, or I'm going to have to sell the team, which logically is what it should be happening. Instead, what you hear is, oh, we're not getting enough fans out to the park. That looks really bad on television. And that is something that I think really hurts modern sports.
Well, I think that that's a good analysis, and I like that you bring it up in the book because it is thought-provoking. It does allow us to discuss it. But let me flip the coin for you just a second here and talk about the Green Bay Packer model of ownership. How is that different? Why is that better than what you're talking about here?
Yeah, it's definitely not perfect pie in the sky, but I do hold it forward as a model for how things can be different. And this is another interesting thing because it gets so under-discussed. And I've met veteran sports writers who did not know that this is how the Green Bay Packers were structured. The Green Bay Packers don't have an owner. They don't have a board of directors that acts as an ownership body. What they have are 112,000 shareholders. And that's who owns the Green Bay Packers. This happens when their articles of incorporation were written back in the 1920s, that they are a fan-owned team by shareholders. And these shareholders elect a board of directors. These shareholders are not allowed to get a profit as a return from their investment. Now we're getting into some very radical territory here. They're not allowed to pull a dividend check. No one is allowed to own an appreciable number of shares for risk that they would make some sort of power play for the team. Instead, what you have is a team that is permanently affixed in Green Bay. There are never any threats to move the Packers and turn them into the Oklahoma City Packers or any other sort of apostasy. But instead, what you get is a very mutual relationship with the community. Like when you go to a Green Bay game and you buy a concession, which, yes, are still at horribly overpriced, as they are in every NFL stadium, a portion of that money goes directly back into the community. A portion of that money goes to benefit local charities. And I just think it's far less of a one-sided, top-down, hyper-abusive relationship that you do see between far too many teams and their cities.
We're talking to Dave Zirin, everybody, author of the book Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Game That We Love. Dave, there's so many different owners, so many different things that I want to ask you about. We're running out of time. We've only got a minute left. But reading your book, it becomes very clear to me that Bud Selig, who is the commissioner of baseball, won't be inviting you to any of his parties. And even if he did, I don't think that you would accept. What is it about Bud Selig that troubles you?
Well, I was once asked on another show why I always describe Bud Selig as so feckless and useless. And I said, well, frankly, because he's feckless and useless. The problem with Bud Selig is that he is a commissioner who is really an owner. He's a masquerade as a commissioner because the point of a commissioner is supposed to be a person who looks out for the best interest of the game, not the best interest of the owners. And yet Bud Selig, who was appointed commissioner after being owner of the Brewers, and for years he held both titles, has not acted in the best interest of the game. Whether you're talking about steroids, whether you're talking about his inability to answer basic questions about next year's All-Star game, which is due to happen in Phoenix, Arizona, despite protests by some of the top players in Major League Baseball because of Arizona's immigration laws. And keep in mind, it's not that Bud Selig is for it or against it. It's that he gives a mealy-mouthed response, and no one even really knows what the hell he means by the time he's done talking about it. I mean, this isn't leadership. It's reaction. And unfortunately, that's who Bud Selig is, and that's what makes him. I mean, he's not even a villain of the book because he's too feckless to be a villain. That gives him too much credit. But this is a time in sports that cries out for leadership, and he just comes so lacking to that benchmark.
We're talking to Dave Zirin, everybody. I just wish I had a guest that was more opinionated, could really come forth and tell me what he thinks. The book is Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Game We Love. In it, he discusses a lot of humorous stories. There's Kevin Millar, the Baltimore Orioles. You cite Hank and Merritt Paulson, one of my favorite stories out of the book. Tell me, Dave, where can people find the book if they want to learn more about what you've written?
Oh, I would go to Amazon.com right away, or I would go to your local bookstore and make sure they have it in stock. Either of those things should work very, very well. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. I'm sorry I had some trouble getting through. We've had electrical storms here in the D.C. Maryland area all morning. It's made any kind of communication very difficult. I hope I can come back sometime.
We'll definitely have you back because your book is a blast. I loved reading it. Bad Sports, Everybody, How Owners Are Ruining the Games That We Love by Dave Zirin. Thanks so much, Dave. We'll talk to you soon.
My privilege. Thanks so much.
And that brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Join us every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell.